Hello and welcome to the City Collective podcast. This is the place where you can hear the latest sermon from our Sunday services, as well as follow-up conversations around teachings within our church. Today, we're going to be expanding on our upcoming sermon series titled Empire, a sermon series on power, sex, and money. My name is Sophie, and I am joined today by Pastor Jason and our creative team lead, Jordan Ravensbergen. Throughout this conversation, we'll be exploring the different themes from our upcoming sermon series and hitting on some different points. How power, sex, and money can become motivators and masters in our lives. How we see some masters crop up in the Old Testament. And the idea of how different things can sit on the thrones of our lives, or this idea of you are defined by what you love. We'll also discuss the necessity of spiritual revelation in our lives, not just the implementation of discipline or healthy habits in regards to things like power, sex, and money. And ultimately, of course, we want this discussion to point us back to the person of Jesus. So to kick off this conversation, I'm going to read a quote by the author James K. A. Smith. He wrote a book called You Are What You Love, and he says, "Jesus' command to follow him is a command to align our loves and longings with his. To want what God wants, to desire what God desires, to hunger and thirst after God and crave a world where he is all in all, a vision encapsulated by the shorthand, the kingdom of God."
It's a great quote, first off, mm-hmm. to get us going in this conversation. And to take us back to July and our planning and thinking about this series, coming out of Easter, we were asking the question, what is it that makes us resurrection people? Mm. And it's a beautiful way to like look at all the things that we can do. And then simultaneously, I think we were also kind of confronted with this idea of like, what are the challenges that we face in being resurrection people in our modern age? And it's not isolated to a modern age. I think the Bible is riddled with all three of these so-called masters, power, sex, and money. They're all part of the biblical narrative, and they are most certainly part of our culture today. And so I think James K. Smith, when he's talking about to hunger and thirst after God, yeah, we want to hunger and thirst after God, but it seems that we're more prone to hunger and thirst after to those things. To be discipled in that manner is just really difficult. It's not an easy journey to go on. When you guys think about those big ideas, power, sex, and money, like what are the first things that kind of pop to your mind?
Well, for me, it's interesting even just having this conversation because I think I've grown up hearing these things that, you know, capital P, capital S, capital M. And as a young kid, I would hear, and even now I'll hear these things and I'm like, well, I don't consider myself to be a power mad person. I don't consider myself to be, you know, a lustful person necessarily or someone who is desperate for money. But I think these things can easily... I think they're contributing aspects to most of our lives in some capacity. And I think the importance or our hunger for them can affect us no matter what kind of power we have in our lives and how much money we have in our lives, what our view of sex or marriage is. They all can creep in some way and get distorted just by our own human perspective. So that's something that I've realized even just, thinking about this a little bit more, they all affect me. They inevitably will affect my life just because they're gifts from God. Ultimately, they can be gifts from God, but the human perspective can easily distort them. And it doesn't matter how much power, money, or, you know, what my view on sex is, they can affect my life in some way. So yeah, I think the whole capital P, capital S, capital M, like just like bringing it back down to how do these things affect my life? How do these things, how does my perspective need to be more of a godly perspective, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me, considering these three things as like a younger person, I expected it to be really obvious, like
to tell
when someone is being ruled by money, by power, by sex. And as I've grown up, I've realized it's much more subtle than that. Like both when I'm judging other people and when I'm looking inward at myself, it's like, oh, this discontent I'm feeling because my Instagram feed doesn't look like someone else's is in part because of like, I wish I had more money to buy the things that they have so I could look like that or what have you. And it's a much more subtle and like not noticeable thing. It doesn't, it's not like someone walking around. I'm just picturing people walking around with signs on their forehead. Like, I am ruled by.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
that's not what it is.
Nobody's got that name tag on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But hindsight's always 20/20 to some degree, especially with these like three categories. I feel like we're quick to say, oh, it's so evident that these one of these three or all of these three was evident in their lives. How did I not see it?
Yeah.
Maybe we should have said something. But you're like both you said, it's like far more subtle. Mm-hmm. Often when we deal with these three categories, we want to put together like the five steps to not be money hungry.
Sure.
or like, here are three ways to make sure that power doesn't rule your life, mm-hmm. or you want to have a healthy sex life. Do these three things in your relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's really easy to try and like systematize something like that when what we're trying to engage with in this series will be elements of the practical, but it's also an understanding of the spiritual.
Yeah.
That there's very much a spiritual reality to these three different areas that the Bible probably more aptly calls counterfeit gods. Mm-hmm. Because you use the word distort, Sophie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That they distort our human image. They distort the way that we are designed to live and operate, and that these things are meant to be gifts, but they're distorted mm-hmm. because they become tools, or they become the manners in which we relate to these counterfeit gods is... it changes us, and it changes the way that they're meant to be interacted with. So mm-hmm. counterfeit gods is probably the biblical spiritual reality that we're mm-hmm. invited to like That's pay really attention good. To.
Yeah.
If I don't understand the gods that I'm serving, then I'm just going to end up falling into the patterns that I'm not expecting. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen over and over and over again. So spiritual realities of these motivators is very much a part of this. These counterfeit gods, these masters in our lives, all these different pieces of language, even when it comes to money, when we get to that part of the series, like the language around money is mammon in the Bible. And so first off, the Bible doesn't shy away from these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think maybe the church is okay with talking about power, but like lust and money or like sex and money doesn't really want to come up as often in conversations. The Bible is not hesitant to deal with these different things and naming them for what they are. And that's often part of the first step for us. Mm-hmm. Can we actually name what is going on in our heart? Because we can maybe say, I'm generous in this way, but how does Jesus name generosity? He looks at the woman who gave all that she had, even though it was little, and he calls her the greatest, the most generous. So it's a matter of where our hearts are positioned in the midst of this. So these three things, once we like start to feed them in the wrong way,
right.
I think it was something that was that something in the quote as well. It's like we want to desire what God desires.
Yeah.
Because when we don't. We're going to find ourselves constantly hungry.
And I think when I was thinking about this today, actually, I think when we grow in our spiritual maturity, but when we grow in our ability to see these three things as God sees them, it allows for so much more freedom to just be like, you know what? I'm allowed to go out and pursue something with more leadership responsibility. I feel called to that in my life. I can go out and, pursue a job that pays more because I want to provide for my family. I want to save up for something. I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah.
I can desire a relationship. I can desire intimacy with another person in the way that God desires that to be for me.
Yeah.
But it's through this process of like maturing and being able to be sensitive to the spirit and being able to see these things as God sees them.
Mm-hmm.
And I also really love the idea of examination, like not shying away from these things. I think these three things can easily be very uncomfortable to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's way more comfortable to talk about the love of God, things that are just more palatable for us sometimes. But I also think that the denial of these three things or shying away from talking about them or not shining light on them at all can make them a breeding ground, like can make a breeding ground for them to get twisted and distorted, shying away from certain things. I think when the power they hold is acknowledged and when we're thankful for the ways that they impact our lives. I mean, God can use them for good in the way that we serve and love other people as well. But the whole idea of examination was really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Taking time to actually be thankful for the ways that they're in our lives and the ways that God gives them to us. So,
Yeah, I wonder when we think about things like power, maybe we can look at it in this conversation, the relationship between these counterfeit gods and the one true God.
Mm-hmm.
So if power is a counterfeit God, but we believe that Yahweh is the one that holds all power and is the ultimate authority, then what happens in that in between? How do we become in service to it?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it before, is this language of like we make ourselves gods.
Mm-hmm.
We think so, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the line from Lecrae that we tossed into the journal.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you get to choose your master doesn't mean you aren't a slave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that naming what God wants out of that area and what it becomes is part of that examination.
Mm-hmm.
Because it goes all the way back to Adam and Eve in the garden.
Yeah.
Right. It's that, that longing for power wasn't so overt. It was just a subtle shifting of the heart that caused an action that displaced God from the place of power that ultimately only he can hold. Yeah. And then I think the same happens with sex. The same happens with money.
Yeah.
We do that over and over and over again. You put a really interesting note in some of our thoughts, Sophie, around the early monastic communities. I thought that's fascinating to look at.
Yeah. This is something that just in doing some more research and reading, I came across and thought it was really interesting. The early monastic communities, you know, they made this vow of poverty, celibacy, obedience. And these vows, or I guess this one big vow to these three things, was in, you know, a direct reaction to the acknowledgement of, you know, the power of money, sex, and power. And so rather than acknowledging it or examining it, kind of this idea of running from it, forming their lives in a way that blocked it out, or didn't shine a light on it, or implementing things in their lives that would hopefully prevent these three things from affecting them in a spiritual way.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, I can understand the reaction. Something is like, well, this has the ability to hold power over my life. Why would I not want to run from it?
Yeah.
And then this idea of rather than running from it, I guess running from it is the only way I know how to word it, but rather than poverty, celibacy, obedience as a reaction to these things, faithful stewardship, covenantal love, selfless service, you're still holding these three things. You're still acknowledging that they can be used by God for good in your life. But you're choosing to see them as God really intended. But I mean, how do you get there?
Yeah.
How do you get to the place of faithful stewardship, covenantal love, selfless service?
Yeah.
What's that process? What does that process look like?
Right.
Yeah. When I hear you talking about just the partial distortion of all these things and the reaction to run from them, it makes me think of the phrase that someone else has said way before me. And I don't remember who it is, but it's the phrase, idolatry is taking something good and making it ultimate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So like power, sex, money, you described ways those can be that God has kind of a plan for those things to be part of our life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there is a way where that is good.
Yes.
But when we make it the ultimate thing or like above
God,
that's when that distortion comes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that doesn't necessarily answer the question of how do we get back to the good part, but
No. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
But like those three areas, say poverty, celibacy, obedience, when you see it from the outside, I think it's really easy to say, well, you're just trying to like run away.
Sure.
You're trying to run away from money, trying to run away from power or from sex. But I think I don't believe that was the original intent of the monastic communities, because we do see outflow in their lives of faithful stewardship, covenantal love, selfless service, the things you're talking about.
Right.
So that leads me to believe that it's not just absence that they're creating, but it's like space for the Spirit of God to come in.
I think
what we often do in our subservience to counterfeit gods is that we lack the ability to just make space. That we're constantly trying to fill the space on our own with our impatience for power, our longing for intimacy, our pursuit of like self-sustenance, like God, all the names of God often are like the exact response to those counterfeit gods. A God of love, a God of power, a God who's a provider. This is all Old Testament biblical language that's we see interwoven for the people of Israel to know that they don't have to turn to the counterfeit gods because they have the one true God.
Right.
So it's not absence, I don't think. And then like the Bible talks about James 4:7. I like think of that children's song, trust in God, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Like James 4:7. Like you just like, maybe it was more of a chant than a song, but I think of that. I'm like, oh, James is saying that the devil, the enemy will run from us. We're not running from him. There's certainly resistance. There's a rejection of that way. But the response of our rejection is him to run away, because our trust in God draws us closer to him. So I like to think that any of those monastic communities and their practices that they're adopting, it's not the practice that is the key. It's the trust in God piece. Going to trust in God for all of my financial requirements. Therefore, poverty is not something that will cause fear within me. Celibacy is something I'm going to adopt because I'm trusting God will be the ultimate source of any kind of lustful desires to be washed away. My obedience to him is that I know that he is the ultimate authority. You see what I'm saying?
I think that
it's just trying to find ways for us to actually have space to trust God. I don't trust God when I don't make space. When my days are busy, I'm running on my own strength. And often you see that like every good movie or every good story. It's like at the end of ourselves is where we find God. And we're like, where were you all along? He's like, I was with you like every step of the way. You just didn't look. You weren't at the end of yourself before you could like reach it. You were trying to rely on these counterfeit gods along the way. And so this is the spiritual reality of these different areas. So yes, there is a denial, but it's not a running away. Like there, it's running to something, not running from something. It's running to Jesus.
Okay.
It's like trusting God that we need to really fight for.
Well, and even something that has come out of the Gospel According to Matthew series is this idea of like what is forming you. And in some of the conversations I've had around that, there's been this idea of like, it's not as simple as like, we turn our brains on when it's something holy and like wonderful, and we turn it off to anything other than that.
That's right.
There's much more nuance than that. So it's kind of like, we need this Holy Spirit guidance and reliance that allows us to, walk through different things without fear, and with kind of a more engaged head and heart. So that it's not just, oh, this isn't within the values I believe God is drawing me to. We shut it all out completely. I think that makes sense.
It's not like a full adoption immediately in every aspect. Like it's a gradual step. It's the renewal of the mind daily. It's a transformation of the heart that has to take place. It's the resistance of our heart from the ways of the world to the ways of Jesus. It's that thing that happens over and over. We see it in the Old Testament. Old Testament's full of moments in which the people of Israel have seen God provide in dramatic and spectacular ways.
Yeah.
And yet there's that moment in the wilderness where they mm-hmm. feel like, oh, God is not my provider. They've mm-hmm. trusted God and God has been faithful. And then they get to a point where it feels like God has not been faithful again. And they're like, oh, well, we were better off in slavery.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I think that, like, to partner with our Lecrae quote, it resonates. It
speaks so much to what it means to be a human.
Yeah.
And our relationship to God. Like, they were willing to give up this freedom that they had prayed for centuries.
That's right. That's
in
right.
In order to return to the bondage just because they were used to that. Yeah. And there were mm-hmm. certain things that they had grown accustomed to.
Yeah.
That is wild. But you just see so many parallels to the way that we engage with God and in the world around us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Trusting God is so difficult because it's not something that's like always tangible
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or it doesn't feel as immediate.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of talking about it when we're reflecting on ourselves.
Mm.
But I would say that we can be really hard on others
mm.
when we look at their journey.
Mm. Yeah.
You've seen God provide. People of Israel, pull it together.
Oh, man, yeah.
Manna from heaven, quail that you were longing for. He split the seas for you. And yet you are saying for the very thing that they've been praying for centuries.
Yeah.
I want to give it all up. Yeah. I want to return to slavery. And it's like just a reminder for me, even as we're talking about it, of like the grace I need to hold for those who are on the journey of allowing Jesus to form them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I can be impatient with myself and I can be impatient with others.
Yeah.
I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, you've seen God do something. You've seen God provide. You've made a decision to follow Jesus. Why are you still doing ABC?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I love how you talked about that idea of God doing things that aren't always tangible mm-hmm. for us to see. And, you know, the phrase of snatching and grabbing.
Mm.
I see things in my life. Like, I can't see God working tangibly in my life. It's really hard for, at least for me as a human being, to not have tangible measures of God doing the things that I want him to do for me.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I snatch and grab at other things that I think are going to bring some sort of tangible fulfillment.
Yeah.
And for them, when they're struggling in the wilderness, they were like, well, I'm not... To be honest, they had tangible, they had manna, they had tangible things, but they didn't have the tangible things they wanted from God. They were in the wilderness. They thought they were going, you know, from slavery into something lush and beautiful, and they're stuck immediately. They're stuck in the wilderness.
Mm.
And so their natural response is like, well, we had some good things back there.
Yeah.
So we might as well just go back.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I do all the time. Snatching and grabbing at things that will bring tangible instant gratification in the moment, rather than trusting that God actually has something better for me than I can snatch and grab for myself. But I don't see the tangible evidence, so I'll resort to something else.
I want to jump on that statement, instant gratification. It like was as you were talking.
Yeah.
Perhaps in many ways, like that is the route of a counterfeit God in opposition to the way of the one true God.
Instant gratification.
Counterfeit gods. They'll feed you what you want when you want it, as quick as they can get it to you. They're not trying to create something that lasts or sustains or provides real life. Counterfeit gods just want you to get your hit, whatever it is.
And they're insatiable. Yeah, they don't
over and over
provide
again
provide lasting fulfillment.
And then God is, well, Yahweh comes into this story and provides something that's meant to be lasting. But it's delayed. And not delayed for like, you got to wait a little longer before I'm ready to give it to you. It's you can't actually fully receive this until you learn what it is to walk with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like delayed gratification versus instant gratification are often like the opposing approaches. Even as we're talking about, it's a really cool idea. The opposing approaches of a counterfeit God versus the one true God.
Mm-hmm.
I think of power, sex, and money. Yeah. It's instant gratification.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And something that is sort of like you said, like a kind of a little bit of a high, or can be sort of like disposable. Mm-hmm. It happens for an instant and then it's gone.
That's right.
I love the metaphor of thinking of what's valuable in life, of like thinking of holding a like disposable Starbucks cup versus like having a good coffee in a like ceramic mug at like someone's house. And it's like, they're very different experiences. There's a certain aesthetic to both. Sure.
Sure.
But like one is going to fill you practically and kind of emotionally, spiritually. Yeah. And the other one is almost purely practical.
On the go. Yeah.
Yeah. On the go, in the moment. Yeah. We just need the thing. Oh, so we'll really take it.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the other one is more long lasting. We'll stand the test of time. We'll be there to remind you again of that time and that comfort. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if that's the approach, instant gratification, or that if that's the provision of a counterfeit God, instant gratification, I wonder if one of the lies of instant gratification is it's reasonable. You need to be able to survive.
It satisfies something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it provides something.
It feels like a pretty reasonable response. Mm-hmm. And maybe at first it does. Where you actually like follow through on it, and you're like at the end of it, you're like, oh, actually, like I had to do that. But it's never with Jesus the exact action as much as like what it did to your heart. It turned. Yeah. So I got from point A to point B. I got the job and I made the money that I needed or I desired, and therefore I provided.
Yeah.
Or. Mm. You can go through the same process and come to the conclusion that God provided, and it will be a healthy relationship moving forward. If you can engage with it in a way that actually offers the throne of your heart to the right thing, then the same thing can have very different outcomes. Mm-hmm. So I know for myself that I can go in one of those the three areas and very easily just call it reasonable. You know what it's like, it's hard right now, just gotta earn money, or you're thinking about even just like the sense of power. You're like, oh, these people have power over me, I need to have power over them,
right?
And then it becomes this vicious cycle. And that's just kind of how the world turns, to be honest. It's like how politics work to some degree.
And it can make it so hard to pinpoint that when things are becoming masters over you.
That's right.
If they only ever feel reasonable. If, like we were talking at the very beginning, really, it doesn't matter how much money I have, I can still be a slave to finances. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what my love life looks like, I can still be a slave to everything that comes with intimacy, sex, love. Doesn't matter what my role in the church is, what my role in leadership is, it can become a slave if it feels like it's necessary for me to build this relationship, to make my rent, whatever.
It's like this facade of like reason that makes us think we're operating with intellect and logic when we're just going from the place of our heart all over again. That we've given over to the wrong God. It's like there's a counterfeit God that's displaced the throne of our hearts and has tricked us into believing that this is actually just intellect and logic, when in reality it's just simply our heart. Our reason's not part of it. It's love that's actually compelling us again. Love for the wrong things in the wrong ways, producing the wrong fruit. But it's a facade. It's not actually what's taking place within us.
Yeah, we're really good at justification.
That's exactly,
Oh, it's just a little treat. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's been a tough day.
Yeah.
And like, to be fair, I do feel like that is a real thing. Sometimes you need a little treat. But there is a extent to that where it's like, when you get to that, it couldn't hurt. Like, when that's sort of the chorus in your head, that's something to maybe be investigated.
Yes. 100%. The heart, what's motivating these impulses or these actions.
Why do I feel like I need these things so often, or in larger and larger quantities, whatever it is.
Yeah, being suspicious of initial responses we consistently justify. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we are consistently justifying or saying that, oh, it's okay, it's not that bad, it'll get better, without actually real action towards dealing with that initial response, then we need to be suspicious of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something else that just popped into my head is also being suspicious of the areas we get really defensive, where we are chatting with friends and they're like, oh, hey, what's this choice you're making about? And it's like, well, I have all my reasons here laid out logically and justifiably.
Yes.
So there's that. Yeah. That's why it's okay for me. And it's like,
that's good.
Oh, maybe that's a moment to actually be like, why do I feel the need to justify it so strongly? Maybe that's a moment to reflect with the spirit and check in about, what's going on in the heart?
Yeah.
Do we need to reframe?
Yeah. And something I love that James K.A. Smith talks about, either in interviews about his book, You Are What You Love, or maybe in his book, You Are What You Love, actually, but this idea that our desires reveal who we are, what we think about, what we focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's our loves and desires that inform our actions more than our intellect or our logic. We're talking about reasoning things, or reasoning through things, making decisions out of logic. We can, make these decisions from a place of what we think is intellect or logic, but it's actually coming from what we're desiring. But I just really love that idea of our desires reveal who we are.
Yeah.
Mm.
What we've been putting in is what we're going to continue to desire.
Yeah.
Which is very convicting.
And are we, when we're looking at these three different areas, are we just simply accepting the groupthink or the mob mentality?
Mm. Yeah.
And we justify that we're right or it's okay because we're like, everyone else does it. And it sounds like such a playground statement.
Sure.
But adults certainly do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we think to ourselves, oh, everyone's watching this show, so I'm just going to watch the show as well. Or everyone is talking this way, I'm going to talk this way as well. We are, as followers of Jesus, called to be light, to be different, to be set apart, to be his people that are called in that way. And that requires us not to be different for different sake,
mm-hmm.
but to be applying our understanding of a situation, not based upon what does the group consider it to be, but what might Jesus consider it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that has to be the difference in our approach.
Mm-hmm.
And often then I think it leads us down a different path of response as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because counterfeit gods often will break the two commands that Jesus gives us. Love God and love people. Obviously the love God one seems to be easy, but I feel like the love people one happens immediately after.
Mm-hmm.
Counterfeit gods cause me to love myself really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They almost force it. Loving people is near impossible if I don't have Jesus appropriately on the throne of my heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's like the spiritual reality in the midst of it. There are certainly like practical ways that we need to deal with like healthy relationships with money, with sex, and with power. We're human beings. We're given brains. We're given the ability to interact with others. We need to have healthy approaches to them that we can learn from one another.
Yeah.
To abandon the spiritual reality or abandon the practical reality, to do either is to set ourselves up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we need to be implementing healthy habits mm-hmm. and boundaries along with having a spiritual revelation that maybe our heart is turned away. Maybe mm-hmm. we have lost track of what's going on mm-hmm. within ourselves and we've just fallen into this mundane routine that's eating away at our hearts.
Sure.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, along the lines of, needing spiritual revelation and protection, I can't expect myself to, through works, through logic, through reasoning, I can't expect myself to just wind up seeing these three things as God sees them by myself.
Right.
Which is why I need spiritual revelation. I need to be, the more I spend time with Jesus,
mm-hmm.
like if we're talking about our desires, if my desires reveal who I am, the more I'm feasting on Jesus and his word, the more I will inevitably continue to crave the things that Jesus would want me to desire. And the more I'm going to see these things, these three things, the way that he sees them.
Yeah.
It's not through willpower or discipline or just the implementation of boundaries and healthy habits that I'll just wind up seeing them how he sees them.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes, like you guys talked about at the very beginning, it's super subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like we've willingly, every time at least, it's not often that we willingly give over the throne of our heart to a counterfeit God.
Right.
But there's moments where the wrong thing sits on the throne of our heart, and then we get these like distorted lenses on that makes it look like Jesus. Like like our version of Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like an unhealthy, like unhealthy version of Jesus that's like culturally based or politically based or economically based. Like it's like whatever one is going to serve me in this moment, I can make you look like Jesus if I squint hard enough kind of deal.
Right. If I put a wig on you, it'll work.
It'll work. Yeah. I won't feel bad about it then. Mm-hmm. And I can still go to church on a Sunday. I can still say I'm reading my Bible. I'll pray when I want something. And we're eventually just loving ourselves.
Yeah.
I think Augustine said that he uses a specific word that means calling a love that turns inward to be the most distorted love. Mm. It's the exact opposite. We've talked about it earlier this year. It's like the Trinity is this community of love at the center of the universe that's inviting us into this relationship alongside to share that love with others. We need to receive it, but it's not meant to be just like a constant like injection of love into ourselves. If we're receiving the love of God, that is our sustenance. We need to be sharing it with others, calling this love to turn outward, not just inward, over and over again. So when we look at the actions and miracles of Jesus, he cares about the physical and he cares about the spiritual. And so over the course of this series, we're going to be looking at both. And my invitation for everybody who's listening is we will have to be honest in the examination of where our hearts and minds have actually been. So the beauty of Easter is it invites us all over again every year to be resurrection people, to be raised to new life. And in order to do that, we have to allow that which was not of Jesus to die. And things that die, it is hard. And it feels like loss. It feels like absence. And it feels like a struggle. But to be resurrection people is to invite Jesus to truly take the throne of our heart and to live as he's inviting us to live with the authority in all these different areas. We're called to live with his power of the Spirit of God within us to declare his realities in the world. We're called to enjoy relationship and to have intimacy both with God and with someone we are covenantly in relationship with. Then we're invited to use money for the purposes of the kingdom, not have it use us, to see the ways in which we can empower the world to know more about Jesus and sending people to the corners of the earth and just doing all that we can. Some of the best things in history have been done because Christians decided they were going to use their money for the purposes of the kingdom. Establishment of whole hospitals and of social services, like all Christian enterprises that came out of a place of they wanted to see the kingdom break into the world. So we're going to talk about that over the course of this series. My invitation to you is pay attention to the subtle ways in which your heart might have been turned. Let's be open to examine and let's invite the Spirit to guide us as we move forward in some probably hard conversations. Sophie, I'll let you close us.
To close out our conversation, we remember that we are not called to run from something, but towards the person of Jesus. To end, I'm going to read 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, and it says, "For God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline." Be sure to check out our YouTube page for weekly sermons and our journal for notes and extras around this series. Thanks for listening.